offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of the Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem, and with me today is Brother Sai Prakash. We are here to continue our satsang on the Conversations with Bhagwan Sri Satyasai Baba, the last episode of this series. Sai Prakash was with us, and I'm happy to have his company again. Before we begin the program and discussing what we have in the content today, we wish you all a very happy and holy Sankranti, a happy Pongal, and greetings on this wonderful occasion, which Swami says is very, very important, an indication to every one of us, Swami says, to embark on the spiritual journey, which is also referred to as Uttarayana. This period of time is also referred to as Uttarayana. And we are happy to be here. And it's also a day which is very special for some of us. As students, the prize distribution ceremony used to take place on this particular day. And in a sense, this day used to be the culmination of close to or more than a month's efforts in the form of the annual sports and cultural meet, adding up to this day. And we would look forward to Swami's discourse on this day, because Swami would say that he was pleased with us, or Swami would say he was happy with the offerings that were made. And literally that 1 month of toil was for that one statement that Swami would make. In that sense, it's a very special day for all of us. And maybe before we begin, you should recollect a little about what this day meant for all of us, isn't it, Sai Prakash?
Absolutely, Prem. It's all through our student growing up years, this was a day which we all eagerly looked forward to.
Right.
Because Padnamaskar was granted. Padnamaskar is the ultimate gift or the blessing that you can get. But along with that, Swami would give us something or the other to encourage us.
Right.
And I believe Swami had instructed the teachers in the primary school that everybody should get something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
No child should feel left out. No child should feel, everybody has got some talent or something. Everybody has got some speciality, some uniqueness, and that should be recognized, and that should be rewarded. But one of the very beautiful explanations that Swami would give as a child, I remember Swami would say, Bahumati. A gift is a Bahumati. But he says, you have to come to single Mati. You should not have multiple minds. Bahumati means gift.
Mati means mind.
Yes. Bahumati means gift in Telugu, but also Mati means mind. So you should not have a mind which is multi-pronged. You should try to focus it on God. So this was something which was very beautiful. And when we were in the school, there was this prize distribution. We had two occasions for prize distribution. One was on Sankranti, when Swami would give all the prizes to the institute boys, for the institute boys. So that would invariably be held in Pune Chandra Hall in those years.
Right.
I'm talking about the early 90s, late 80s and early 90s. So it would be invariably held in the Pune Chandra Hall. And a couple of days later, maybe a few days later, school prize distribution would be there. And for the school boys, Swami would come all the way to the institute auditorium. And we would have the school prize distribution there. And this was something very special for the school boys, because Swami was specially coming for giving us, the school boys, our prizes and gifts and all that. And one of those years, it was in our 11th standard, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was 94 or something, 94 or 95. And invariably what would happen is some of the teachers and the elders in the school, they would get involved in the stage decoration for the prize distribution. And so they would say, do it like that. Then, some of the budding artists that we had in our class, we had, you know, there was a pain in our hearts which said, how can the teachers tell us what to do? We want to do something unique for Swami. And see, you are in your 11th class and you don't think much. It's just a feeling that we want to do something for Swami. We want to do something unique. And so what shall we do? And somebody said, why not we make a globe? So how does a globe fit in? Who cares? What we wanted to do was make a globe. We wanted to do something for Swami on prize distribution day. So what we did was, we brought three of those huge bamboo stakes, cut it into half and tied it at three angles. And then with all the scientific knowledge that we could muster up, we started tying several bamboo stakes around and tried to get a round shape. And then we tied that, and then we started sticking layers of paper.
How big was this globe?
This was about 5.5 feet. Diameter. So it was quite a huge, and we had to literally stand up on top of a chair or a stool to reach the top and paint on top and all that. And the first step was, of course, to get some shape. And to put it mildly, the globe was very organic in its shape. There was no sense of proportion. There was no sense of smoothness. And we were just, you know, sticking layers of paper, newspaper with maida, that was the technique that we used. So once the paper dries up, then it retains the shape. So we were just going on, and the only thing that was, we should do something unique for Swami. We should do something unique for Swami. So anyways, the globe was made, and then we had to paint it. And so we went and bought some distemper and stainer and dark blue stainer. I remember painting the oceans deep blue, and some of the teachers came and said, no, no, this is too dark. Swami will not like it. We didn't know how to lighten it. And then it was too dark. Anyways, we told him, sir, actually deep oceans, this is the color, sir. It is very dark. And all explanations were given. But somehow or the other, now the moment of truth had arrived, and we were asked by the stage decoration committee to bring whatever you wanted to put on the stage, bring it to the school entrance. In the school entrance, you know, before you climb the staircase, there is a place, there is a foyer kind of area where we would have our daily for this thing assembly as well. So there, in the evening time, we were told to bring. So, of course, our teachers knew we were making a globe. And so we brought the globe. And the globe was all standing on different things. And then one of the elders suggested, why don't you mount it on an axle, cycle wheel axle, so that it has some balance. So somehow or the other, we had brought a cycle axle, and then we welded a rod in the center and took this globe and then stuffed it into the rod, and somehow it stood. And we had painted the thing, and then the committee came, and the committee said, oh, so you all have made a globe. We said, yeah, it looks pretty obvious that this is a globe. And we were quite proud of it. And we said, so this is our offering to the Lord. And suddenly one of the elders said, but what is the use of a globe if it does not rotate? Oh my God, in that moment we thought, Swami, what are we going to do? The globe is not rotating. We have not planned that we should put a motor or we should do something for the globe. And it's quite a huge globe, 5.5 to 6 feet nearly. We went all out and made this huge globe, and then we just in 1 second we prayed to Swami, and you won't believe what happened. Exactly at that moment, a strong gush of breeze came from the window, and the globe started rotating on its own. Everybody was literally shocked. I still get goosebumps when I think of that moment, because all the elders are standing. Some few of our boys, we were literally in tears. We are just praying to Swami, do something. We don't want our globe to be cancelled out. And just that breeze came and it started rotating. Somehow that cycle axle that we had mounted it on, it was perfectly balanced. And when that gentle breeze came, it was rotating. And so finally on that day, on the prize distribution day, we had this globe right behind Swami's chair. And when the curtain opened before Swami arrived, people stood up and gave a standing ovation.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way the globe was rotating was so majestic, so controlled. And people were wondering, oh, how did you make the globe rotate? It was so... Nobody knew that we just put a table fan in the back. We followed the method shown by Bhagwan. There was a breeze that came in. So we just put a table fan in the back. And that breeze was enough to rotate the entire globe in a very gentle and beautiful way. And the only thing that this entire episode shows us that when you go with the pure intention of trying to make something for Swami, He makes it beautiful. He accepted it, and then Swami went, when He came on the stage, He stood next to the globe and looked at it and said, oh, they made a globe. And it was gently rotating, and Swami saying, see how nicely it is rotating. And the caption that was given for the globe, on top of the globe, was Shat Chakravarti.
Beautiful.
That was the caption that was given. Bhagwan is the Shat Chakravarti. He is the king of kings. And so that was the caption given. And I still remember it was such a beautiful memory associated with prize distribution. Although not exactly on Shankranti, but associated with Shankranti. So this whole memory of Shankranti and Swami giving away these cups, He would give to each campus huge cups, and there is no competition, as we all know. It is just, it is a spirit of offering, collective offering to Swami, which was more important.
Absolutely. In fact, even as you're saying about competition, you know, that's the beauty. In fact, one of the points that Swami would make during Sankranti discourses is that.
Right.
That you saw sports, but there was no competition. There was only a sense of offering.
Correct.
One of our lecturers, Mr. Dr. Pallav Barua, he was narrating about when he was a student in Vrindavan. And those were the times when they used to have inter-campus games.
Right.
So, you know, inter-campus means it's UG versus PG. And invariably, there was like no match. There were some sports in which the UG boys were better.
Right.
But overall championship, there's no way they could make it. So they lost most of their, sports. Finally, it came down to a volleyball match, right? So between what we played between Vrindavan and Prashanthi Nilayam.
Right.
And generally, these matches will be best of three sets, right? So they started the match, and that day Swami came for seeing the match, and so Swami came and sat over there, and Swami was in a, you know, quote unquote, very good mood. You know, we have this illusion of attributing moods to Swami, but that is a day when Swami, you know, chose to really enjoy the game, so to say. So Swami was sitting there, and Swami was cracking jokes. There were children sitting around Swami, and being a lopsided competition, the masters, the Prashanthi Nilayam campus had won it 2-0.
Okay, right?
So officially the match should have ended there.
Right.
They looked at Swami, and Swami showed no signs of getting up. Right, and they also didn't want to stop, because, you know, you have the audience of Swami, why do you want to stop?
Right.
So instantly they decided, we'll make it best of five.
Okay.
They played one more set, which they lost. So they lost 3-0. So then said, okay, we'll extend it a little further, we'll see how far it goes. Then they made it one more set or something, and they didn't seem to be winning at all, right? So finally they said, all right, let's forget the points. Let's keep playing till Swami is sitting. And they went on and on, and it was like they lost, there was no scoring after that. And Swami sat for so long, I think almost till he sat till a point where Vrindavan won one set. Purely because of, tiredness, they might have lost. Then Swami said, now equal. And Swami got up, and when they were saying that only Swami is capable of doing that. You know, you start off with a sportive spirit of competition. And Swami converted it into an offering.
Right.
And they said, I mean, imagine they played for close to 2 hours or something like that, all sweating and dripping in that, and it also started drizzling. In the drizzle, Swami was sitting. Then in that, Swami came and gave a group photo to them. Swami's robe was drenched in their sweat, literally like that. No, but Swami was so in that moment. And I think that is the, you know, message of Sankranti, as Swami would say, that, you know, you don't have to do anything extraordinary. You don't have to go out of your way and do something. Whatever you're doing in life, make it an offering to God. And that is the essence of this festival, where Absolutely. You turn towards God as a, you know, make the path itself directed towards God.
Everything acquires a speciality, everything acquires more color, everything acquires more, you know, enthusiasm when it's offered to God.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I think, in the gist of what they do even during Sankranti traditionally.
Right.
Everything is celebrated. There's a harvestry season and everything is celebrated and there's so much of color and gratitude to the
right,
Lord.
Right.
That's the thing.
We'll, in that short reminiscence, we'll get back to the conversations with Bhagwan Shri Satyasai Baba. I think we are in the last few chapters of that series. We went through a portion last time where Swami, the discussion was about the enormous energy that Swami exhibits.
Right.
Right? In the parallel series, we go through the Sanatan Sarathi and sometimes you can only marvel at the amount of travel that Swami does, amount of exertion that physical frame goes through.
Mm-hmm.
There are days when Swami gives 4 discourses, 5 discourses, traveling hundreds of kilometers in a single day, right? And it's beautiful, and I mean, it's impossible to give a complete sketch of whatever Swami has done.
Right.
We were talking to one devotee. I think Swami was traveling and visiting places near Rajahmundry. Late into the night, after finishing a meeting, Swami was going back to the place where he was staying. Must have been well past 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, Swami gives directions. Swami says, we'll take a different route.
Okay.
Right? And people didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami kind of literally broke away from the convoy and the people only in Swami's car, and Swami's giving instructions. And Swami drove into one particular place, what we refer to as Agraharam.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Many of the Agnihotris, the Brahmin pandits, they stay together in one portion of the village. So Swami comes to one particular place like that. And Swami swiftly gets down from the car and walks towards one of the houses.
Mm-hmm.
Gets into the house, goes to the first floor, knocks, spends some time there, and then he comes out.
Mm.
And then Swami says, okay, let's resume. And they said, Swami, whom did you go and visit like this?
Mm.
Then Swami mentioned the name of one pandit. Apparently, he was one of the pandits who had come during the first few, Dashara Yajnams, which he performed. So he and his wife would come.
Mm-hmm.
And he had not come for a few years, apparently because his wife had fallen ill.
Oh.
She had paralysis or something and she could not, travel. So during one of the visits when they had come to Parthi, Swami had told them, don't worry, even if you're not able to come, I will come and see you.
My God.
And from where Swami broke that journey and went and fulfilled that promise and gave, and because few people were sitting in the car, they got to know, right?
Right.
How many such events. And when you observe Swami, and we all have observed Swami, and we have observed Swami in the later years,
mm-hmm.
the amount of energy that Swami had, unmatchable, really.
Really, in fact, one more beautiful such story which Kasturi uncle narrates.
Mm-hmm.
He says they were driving back from Hyderabad.
Okay.
And oftentimes, every time they are driving, Swami's car is always loaded with fruits, with some currency notes, and lots of things which Swami can give away, sweets which Swami can give away on the way. And one of those days they were coming, and there was a lady who was carrying a child on one side and a huge basket of, but quite empty. The basket mm-hmm. was empty, some fruits were there in the basket, and she was just carrying and walking along the path. And suddenly Swami stopped the car, and she felt encouraged that a car is stopping next to her and maybe she can sell some of her fruits or she can... And Swami got down from the car, and Swami went to her and asked her, have you heard of Sai Baba? And she said, yeah, I heard from some people, they say there is one Sai Baba, and I've heard about him, mm-hmm. but I have not seen him. Swami said, I am only Sai Baba. See, I have come. I have come for you. I am only Sai Baba. And then he called from, and Swami was so happy. And he brought and filled her basket with fruits and blessed the child and blessed her profusely and gave namaskar. And Swami said, "See, I am only Sai Baba. I have come to bless you." And then so much of happiness and bliss, Swami blessed her and got into the car and drove.
That's simplicity. You know, Dr. Iyer, who works in a super specialty hospital, he would say, he came just as a doctor. You know, he was applying for different institutes and he found that this institution, you know, the principles that they stand for was something that he, was a cause that he wanted to contribute to as a doctor. And that's how he ends up applying and he's chosen. So after he's chosen, the first day before he joins duty, they said that you should come and sit in Mandir and take Swami's blessings before you come. So he's sitting in the portico. And that day something Swami was busy with. There was some event happening in Purnachandra or something. And Swami came a little late. So Swami comes to him and, I think Swami calls him inside the interview room or in the portico itself. Swami comes and apologizes to him. I'm really sorry I made you wait for so long. And Swami is explaining, I was busy, you know, this group had come and I was talking to them. So he says, as thinking, I am joining the Sri Satya Sai Institute of High Medical Sciences. And he is the Sri Satya Sai. I mean, he is the, look at it from the point of view of a celebrity status. You know, he is the person who is going to be my boss of bosses.
Correct.
There was no necessity for him to come and do literally like that. God comes to you, introduces himself and then fills us with joy. So talking about that enormous energy that Swami was displaying.
Right.
Hislop is asking questions based on that. You know?
Right.
And that is when he says, when human energy slows down, Swami says, you can turn to divine energy. And at that point, he talks about Swami. He says, there are times when we have seen Swami a little tired, but then Swami just refreshes and comes back and seems like something, some transformation has happened. And for that, Swami says, don't equate this body with any other body.
Right.
Even though it is a physical body, it is very different. And there Swami speaks about how every act performed by Swami is based on selflessness.
Right.
And that in itself gives a different dimension and different presence to this body. It cannot be equated to any other body. So that is where we had stopped, where Swami says that maybe we'll just quickly read that paragraph again we discussed about. Do not equate this body with human bodies. It is only the appearance of a form for the sake of the devotees. There is nothing of Swami except for his devotees. There are no desires. This body is just an appearance of form. There is matter. There is humanness. There is divinity. Matter is selfishness. Humanness is selfishness. But some kindness, God has no selfishness. Just total love. As the base, selfishness is essential for health and prosperity. Without health, what can be done? Work for these must be done. Then help others. Then God alone.
Only.
God only. And then Hislop says in response to that, but Swami, even in that worldly work of necessary selfishness, where is I? Surely it is only God who is doing work. And Swami replies, yes, that is better. That is the best way. You are only an instrument for Swami, an instrument which Swami is using for his purpose. You, US chairman, speaking of Swami's teachings and so on. That idea of being an instrument is so important. I was listening to a talk by one of our very senior bhajan singers, Mr. Sonam. All our listeners have heard him so many times on the radio. He was narrating of how when they were all bhajan singers, he came from Sikkim, a lot of boys came from Northeast. They all used to bring compositions from, you know, their states. Many great devotees, many great musicians.
Right.
Those songs they would come and present in front of Swami and Swami would be so happy. One point suddenly Swami comes and says, I'm bored of all these old bhajans. You know, why can't you sing new bhajans? So he was saying that till that point, we could never think that we can sit and compose bhajans.
Right.
He said, how are we to even imagine that we are, after all, singers. Somebody composes and we just sing in front of Swami. But because Swami said this, you know, they all went back and overnight everybody turned composers. And, you know, they were lost in that for some time till there were many episodes where Swami realized that, you know, I've just made you an instrument. I've just made you a conduit for this to happen.
Right.
And he was narrating one very beautiful episode. One particular year when Swami came and said that you all can sing for the Jula function. Mm. Right? Because every year it would be some professional group, mainly P. Sushila and her group. That particular year, Swami said, let students do the program.
Okay. 60th birthday.
Then Swami said, but the condition is every day you have to come and show me some new composition. So they were like struggling and they were scampering around and whatever they were able to gather, they were offering it to Swami. So you're saying that we should have one nice Telugu song offered as a Jula song. So somebody had composed a very beautiful Telugu song. He said, I had no idea of Telugu, so I called one more singer, another veteran, S. Kumar.
Yes.
So he said, you read out the lines. Hmm. So you'll know the right pronunciation. So accordingly, we'll, you know, compose the song with that meter. So he read out. And literally, even as it was being read out, he was able to come up with a tune.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like there was no discussion in that.
Instantly.
He was reading out. He was coming up with a tune. And at the end of it, he said, what thrilled me most was, it had been composed in a 9-beat meter or something, he was saying. And a couple of years back, he had asked one of the senior devotees who has composed many songs for Swami's Jula, that, you know, how do you compose a song for Swami's Jula? And he said, I have composed many songs, but I've realized that a 9-beat song is best for Jula.
Oh.
Because it is slow and it has that,
possibly 10 beats.
10-beat maybe. Yeah. I might be wrong in that. Mm. So he said that best suits when Swami is sitting in the Jula. And he said, here we were, without our knowledge, spontaneously had composed a tune. And that tune was in that 10-beat, this one. So they were very thrilled and they were very eagerly waiting to, perform it in front of Swami the next day in the interview room and say that Swami, we have composed this. So Swami calls them and Swami says, okay, what have you brought today?
Mm.
So they say, Swami, it's a Telugu song.
Mm.
And he and S. Kumar start singing it. And just as they are singing, Swami starts humming and starts going ahead of them and singing the next line.
Wow.
Exactly the same tune that they had come up with, the same words. And both of them realized, you know, you should know, being an instrument, what it is. It's a live demonstration of,
beautiful,
of that.
Beautiful.
We'll go to the next part. So I think this might be a different session because Hislop notes that the questions are being asked by somebody else. Or Swami is posing a question here first.
Swami starts off. Right. Yes.
Swami is saying, what is being? And the person answers, it is Sat. Then Swami replies, that is just a Sanskrit word. Being means immortality. So that is Swami's answer for Sat.
Sat. Right. This is, in fact, in, I think, 1974, in one of the summer course discourses, Swami very beautifully says, what is so unique about, what is very surprising about human life? We all are intelligent. Human beings are intelligent. They're very, they can understand subtleties of creation and everything. But at the same time, nobody seems to remember that they are going to die someday or the other. Everybody feels that they're going to live on forever. And everybody feels that we are going to be alive forever. And he says, that is not a mistake. Because that is the attribute of Sat. Of being. Of immortal. Of being immortal. That is the attribute of the Atman. Sat is the attribute of the Atman where that being is permanent. And it exists forever. So Swami says, a part of that is reflected in our way of thinking. Where we say that we will always live forever.
Beautiful. I think that's what Swami says here. What is Sat? Sat is that being. Swami has explained this many times, you know, that existence, what you refer to as isness.
Yes.
Something is present, that which is the substratum for everything. Swami says that you now associate yourself with something very superficial, Mm-hmm. But the whole idea is to associate yourself with that. I think later in the discussion also the same same topic comes, where Swami says it's all about the wrong association of who you are.
Correct.
Yeah. Mm. So then the conversation proceeds, where Swami says that is just a Sanskrit word. Being means immortality.
Right.
How to feel that divine love in the heart? And Swami replies, your love, my love, they are the same. There is only one and he is God. Then the person further asks, do you mean we should affirm that we should always say it? Then Swami replies, here is humanity, pointing to a line in the wall denoting a layer of bricks. Below is the world, above is God. Aim up, not down. You are God. There is only one. For so many lives you have been declaring that you are human with limitations. I am faulty, I am so and so. That is wrong. Now say, I am God. Never feel or say that you are other than God. You will show godly qualities, you will have godly powers, you will be God. If there are no thoughts, there are no actions. I think that's where that explanation ends. And after that, Swami is asking something to Islam.
Yes. So if there are no thoughts, there are no actions.
Right.
Such a powerful paragraph, where he says that the humanity is at a particular level and we should aim higher. And aiming higher is actually asserting the fact that we are part of divinity, that we are divine.
Right, and the way Swami puts it, just as we were telling, you know, there is a line, there is something above, there is something below.
Mm-hmm.
It is just the where you're looking or where you're aspiring to be. I was watching an old classic movie in which there's a very beautiful dialogue. The way it is said, it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think this person, the way he is portrayed, a little autistic kind mm-hmm. of a thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some of these mentally, they're rightly called specially abled.
Right.
Sometimes they see things more clearly than
their perception.
Their perception is much, much more precise and clear, true. So he says, you know, he's talking to another character in the movie, and the person says, you know, I think they're in the prison. They've done some mistake and they end up in the prison. And then that person says, you know, what do I do? After all, I'm human.
Mm.
So this person who's autistic, he says, it's interesting, isn't it? We say this statement every time only when we do mistakes. We say it is natural.
Mm.
Why is it that when we do good, we don't say, after all, I'm human.
I'm human, huh?
Right? And he says that if we do that, then we will say that being good, being loving, being kind is natural. Because we keep asserting that whenever we do a mistake, we say that after all, I'm human. We are saying that it's natural to be like that.
Mm.
So he says we should first say that it's unnatural to be like that. So no, that's a very profound way of looking at it.
Absolutely.
In fact, that's what Swami says. When some devotee said, Swami, to err is human. Swami said, who gave you that misconception? So to be divine is human. To move towards that divine identification as human, not identification with the mistakes that you do.
In fact, there's a very interesting perspective to this whole idea that, you know, we all are divine, that the whole creation is divine. Mm-hmm. In the Upanishads, the Mundaka Upanishad, is just going through some of the verses there, and there, in the Upanishad, they do not say that Brahman is the creator.
Mm-hmm.
So the concept of creation is not as powerfully portrayed as the concept of manifestation.
Okay.
They say that Brahma manifests this entire creation. It's not as if Brahma creates.
Right.
So in a sense, see, creation in a sense also says, okay, there is something that is separate from you. You have created, like an artist has created a masterpiece, a painting. The painting separate from the artist.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say that they have manifested, So it is not a sense of creation, but it is a sense of manifestation. So so there is absolutely no difference between the creation and the creator. And that was, of course, they give that classic analogy as well of the spider. And a spider weaves this whole web around it, but this whole web has come out from the spider. And any time the spider wants, it can take back the entire web into itself. So it's a manifestation from itself. So when Swami says, look up and assert yourself that you are divine, you are part of the divine, it has a very beautiful connotation that we are not separate from the divine. We are just a different a manifestation of the of divinity, who is possibly under the illusion that we are separate. So that is a different perspective, and the Upanishads is all about it. And they say that if you start saying that Brahman is the creator, then they say, who was Brahman born to? Who is the parents of Brahman? And it goes into an endless loop. So he says it is not like that. Brahman manifested, and that manifestation is this creation. So that was something.
I think, is it the Mundaka only where the analogy of the two birds is also...
Yes, given, very much. Right? Yeah, in the Mundaka Upanishad, it's, they talk of the two birds right. on the tree where the upper bird is just looking,
right.
You know, smiling and looking at the lower bird, which is very busy eating the fruits. Mm-hmm. Some of the fruits are sweet, some of them are not sweet. Mm-hmm. And so the bird goes through ups and downs, but... the bird sitting on the higher branch, which is symbolic of the Atman, of the Jivatma.
Right.
It's just a witness. It's just witnessing.
So they see, I was reading a commentary on that. At one point, the bird, you know, it's hopping from branch to branch in search of sweet fruits.
Right.
At one point, it eats a fruit which is so bitter that Vairagya comes.
Oh, okay.
And then the bird looks up and sees this other bird and you know, marvels at that equanimity and yearns for that state. And eventually, when you know, it through these hopping, it finally goes higher and higher, and then it is said that when it comes to this other bird, it finds that there was no other bird.
There is no other bird.
It was the reflection. There was only one bird all the while.
Right.
That, as you were saying, Swami would say this, the same Lord manifests as this world, that pure form is there in every aspect of this creation.
Correct.
And, there's a very beautiful statement that Krishna makes in the Gita. He says, everything is contained in me and I am contained in everything. The Supreme Lord is one who contains everything and everything is a container of him.
Right. See, I mean, here Swami is saying this is the ultimate, like, aim high and try to recognize the divinity in you. But in our scriptures, and again in the Bhagavad Gita, you have this whole, you know, I would say gradation of awareness, if you were to put it in that way. Gyatum drashtum praveshtum.
Right.
So in the 11th chapter, Lord Krishna says, talks about these stages of gyatum drashtum praveshtum. One is to know. Like, who is there, like, Bhagawan to tell us that you are actually divine? I mean, imagine millions of people around the world who have no concept of what is spirituality, what is divinity, what is... It is just a great good fortune that, you know, we have been exposed, like Shravanam. So, it's a gyatum, first to know. And then, drashtum is something we have seen, that manifestation of divinity in front of us, that is Swami himself. And we have seen how every moment, every action reflects that pure divinity. Like Swami said in the previous segment, that there is no selfishness at all. And then praveshtam is to assert ourselves. In fact, in one of the discourses, Swami said, 80 to 85% of your sadhana is inquiry.
Correct.
He said, inquiry is most important. You may do all your pujas, you may do your japa, dhyana, everything you can do, but inquiry is so important. Another beautiful incident which comes to mind is in the book Anyata, Satyasa Anandadai. So these people are going to leave to Mysore, they are going back, and they tell Swami, Swami, we want to do Pada Puja. And then Swami says, but how will you do Pada Puja? You will miss your bus. Swami will take the evening bus. Mm. And Swami said, okay, no problem. And so morning they were ready with Pada Puja, with all the paraphernalia, and they were ready. And Swami just avoided seeing them. And then after the bhajan or something, Swami has gone up. And they went up. And Kannamma, who is there, who has been coming to Swami from the 40s, I think, so she could go up. And she then Swami asked, "Hey, what happened? Why have you come here?" Then she said, "Swami, you told we can do Pada Puja. So we all are ready and you have not given us the opportunity." Then Swami said, "Oh, okay, okay, come, let us go down." And he came down to the interview room, and I think Kannamma's mother was there. And Swami looked at her and told, "At least you give some sense to these people. How long they will keep doing this Pada Puja, this sadhanas, these things? They should go inward.
Mm-hmm.
How long they will be doing all this outside puja? This is all right, but the main purpose is that they should go inward, and they should start contemplating and thinking and believing that they are part of the divine." Of course, she writes in the book that Swami did give us opportunity to do the Pada Seva, because probably we were pining for it sincerely. And so Swami gave the opportunity for Pada Seva, but at the same time gave them this message that start going deeper, start going within.
Right. In a sense, it is it's the culmination of whatever we are trying to do, you know, and put as very, very simply as self-transformation.
Right.
When you talk of it, as you, if you really observe what happens when you undergo this process of self-transformation, you become purer, you become better, you become calmer. What it will eventually lead to is self-discovery.
Correct.
If self-transformation is not leading to self-discovery, then it is not being done in the right way.
Right.
And when that, when you let go of whatever is not, then that association with God will have to be made. So that is why Swami would keep that as the ideal that you work towards. You know, devotion is very important. Swami says that devotion is what leads you to that. But that ideal is never given up.
Mm.
In fact, you know, Swami Vivekananda, when he goes to the Parliament of Religions,
mm-hmm.
he says that that is the greatest gift of Vedanta to mankind.
Mm-hmm.
It calls you children of immortality.
Right.
It doesn't say children of human birth, children of... Mm. It says children of immortality, which means that is your you know, wealth that is due to you. And you must strive to attain that.
In fact, Kasturi Uncle records that when Swami went to Africa,
mm-hmm.
and he was translating Swami's discourses into English, he said, Swami stressed again and again on the fact that all of you are Atman.
Mm.
All of you are Divyatma Surupulara. In fact, some of the Indians who kept some of the Africans outside the Shamiana, Swami was very upset.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I have come for them, not for you people. Mm. If you are going to behave like this, I am going to go back to India. And he said, everybody, because they have, as a people, they have suffered so much of discrimination. And Swami went to infuse, he writes so beautifully that Swami went to infuse that confidence, self-confidence in them, that you are not any less compared to anybody else. You all are also Divyatma Swarupularas. You are also part of the Atman. So right. That is what.
Beautiful. And this section ends with the Swami asking about Hislop's health.
Right.
And he says, yes, Swami, it is good. Then he adds a small note where he says, during the group portion of this interview, a lady with a dull colored bracelet on her arm showed her wrist in front of Baba and asked him to change the bracelet to something pretty. It seemed to me that Baba was not pleased with the demand, but nevertheless, he removed the bracelet, held it with two fingers, blew his breath upon it, and it became a new shining gold bracelet of an entirely different pattern and configuration. At this point, the group portion of the interview ended and Swami began the series of private conversations in the inner interview room. You know, he does indulge us too.
Yes.
Even though Swami is here to lead us to the ultimate, which he never fails to do, which he never, you know, spares us from, if we can put it that way.
Mm.
But nevertheless, he indulges us. Right. we'll take a short break here because there's a the conversation resumes on the other side. It's a different theme altogether.
Right.
So we'll probably take a short break here, dear listeners. Don't go away. We'll continue with these conversations at the other side of the song.
Saai tumhara jeevan hai, sab rang ko paasa.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We'll resume our discussion on the conversation with Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba. The next part which we are going through, again, Hislop starts with a note where he says, Baba first created some gifts, a ring for a lady, a green diamond in the center flanked by two white diamonds. All gems showed large flat facets. Then for a lady who had a large japamala of seeds, Baba created a japamala of matched pearls and showed her how to use it. Swami explained this by saying the thumb standing separate may be taken to represent God. The first finger representing the individual person is joined to the thumb, to the divine. The three remaining fingers represent the three gunas, the three modes of temperament, thought and action, observable in all people. The middle finger being the sattvic guna, the japamala is then drawn across the sattvic finger by the thumb and the forefinger movement. So that's how he starts this. I think anybody is interested in how to use a japamala.
Japamala. And
I think the first description is that of chin mudra, right? Swami would often say that pointing finger and the thumb holding it together is like saying the jivatma and the paramatma coming together, and the three other fingers represent the three gunas.
Gunas, right.
So Swami is, if you are able to get that right, the japamala is resting on the middle finger.
Right.
Right. And it is being moved by the thumb.
Thumb, yes.
Where the pointing finger stands out and is used in the movement. So Swami says that's how the thumb, the japamala has to be used.
Before we proceed, there is this, you know, the previous section where this lady asks that her dull bracelet be made. It's a very interesting prayer because, you know, God comes. Kalpavriksha is here. Whatever you ask God, He will fulfill your wish accordingly. And till the time you grow to a level where you ask for the right thing, He keeps showering what you ask for. You know, I am reminded of this beautiful story from the life of Shirdi Baba. And there is this beautiful book, Life of a Saint, Shirdi Sai Baba. In that, there is this chapter about a devotee called Megha. So Megha is actually from a place called Marwar. And he's working with somebody in Gujarat, helping him. And he's a Brahmin, but he didn't know much about scriptures, didn't know much about mantras and all that. But he was working under one Rao Bahadur Hari Vinayak Sathe. So he was working with him, and this person was Swami's devotee, Baba's devotee. And so he told Megha one of those days that, why don't you go and visit Sai Baba, he is my guru, Sadguru. And then first thing Megha asked is, what is his caste? And he said, no, we don't know his caste, but he lives in a masjid. And he, everybody goes to him. He said, he is a Yavana, he's like a Muslim, this thing. How can he be my guru and all that? Very innocently, Megha said. And, but because his boss is telling him and his master is telling him, he said, okay, let me go. And as expected, he was greeted with shouting from Lord from Shirdi Baba. Swami said, oh, here has come the great Brahmin. And look who has come. And I am a lowly person. And the great Brahmin is coming into this place. Why are you coming here? And he literally took a stone and was going to throw it at Megha. And that Megha got scared and he ran away. And but then he later realized that it was just to tell him that I know what your thoughts are, and he came back. Now the beautiful part was that he came with a certain set, a mindset that this is Lord Shiva and I should worship Lord Shiva like this. And so Baba allowed him to do it. He gives you what you want. And so initially what happened when he stayed for a couple of days, he still could not develop that kind of faith on Baba. And he had to go back to Gujarat, wherever he was working. And then he said one of those days when he went to a Shiva temple to do puja, instead of the Shivling, he saw Baba there. And that is when his love and faith, and he started realizing that Baba is Lord Shiva himself. So he came back to Shirdi and he prayed to Baba that I want to do a ritualistic worship. Just like we talked about Pada Puja earlier. He said, I want to do a ritualistic worship. Baba said, okay, do it. He had never allowed anybody else to do, but since Megha had asked, he said, okay. And so he himself had formulated one whole procedure where he would get up in the morning, go to different temples, do different pujas, different deities, and then finally come and culminate the puja in masjid and do it directly to Baba. And so one of those days he was doing, and the Khandoba temple was closed by the time he went there. And he skipped that and he came and Baba said, hello, what happened? You missed out one part of your regular. See, you have formed the ritual. You are worshipping the Lord in that particular way, but he gives that also respect. He said, Baba, but it is closed. He said, no problem, now you go. It is open. So he went back to Khandoba temple, did the puja and then came back. And so this was going on. And he got it in his mind. See, again, it is our perceptions and our approach that Lord Shiva should be worshipped only with Bilva Patra. And he searched everywhere around Shirdi and he couldn't find Bilva tree. So he would walk every day 1.5 miles to go and get the Bilva Patra. So every day he would go walk 1.5 miles, get the Bilva Patra and then offer that to Lord, to Baba, and he would do puja. And Baba would accept it. And so one day he told Baba that, see, I want to do an Abhishekam for you. And that happened to be the day of Shankaranti.
Okay.
So surprisingly enough, he said, you are Shankara, and this is Shankaranti, and I am going to do a. Then Baba said, why all that? Next day was Shankaranti. He said, why all that? Don't stick to all this traditional, this thing. No, Baba, I want to do, and I am going to do a special puja and all that. And Baba didn't say anything. So he got up early in the morning, walked 8 miles to Godavari, and brought Ganga water, Godavari water, and he said, I am going to do Abhishekam to Baba. And Baba said, you know, why all that is needed? You have brought Ganga water. Anything, all water is holy. And he was saying, he said, no, but I want to do this puja. And then Baba said, okay, see, I'm not in any very big mood for a bath and for an Abhishekam as such. Take little water and sprinkle it on my head. See, that is enough. That is symbolic of having done Abhishekam to the entire body. That's okay. Then he said, yes, and all that. And Baba actually removed his kafni on the top. And he said, okay, you can do your, take little water. And he was so lost in bliss. He said, har, Gange. And he took the entire pot of water and poured it on Baba's head. He was lost in that bliss. And he said, oh, I've got this opportunity. And he just forgot all the instructions. Har Gange, you know, so immersed, and he poured it. And the moment he poured it, he realized his mistake. He said, my God, what have I done? And he said, Baba had specifically told me to sprinkle a little water. But wonder of wonders, when they saw, not a drop of water on Baba's kafni. Only his hair had a few drops of water, just as he had given permission. He had given permission, and he said, okay, a few drops of water on the hair. And this man emptied the entire pot with Godavari water in it, but entire body of Baba was dry. And so then he fell at Baba's feet, and then again Baba came to him later in a dream, and Baba said, draw the Trishul. And then he didn't understand. And then the next day somebody came from Pune, Pune, and they offered a shivling, and Baba gave it to Megha and said, now your Shiva has come, worship it. So he said, as he was worshipping this Shiva, then he started realizing that Baba, Sai Baba is only Shiva, and his approach to devotion, you know, broadened, and he started having that broad vision of what divinity actually is. In fact, during that vision, Baba says, Baba appeared to him and said, draw a Trishul. And next morning he went to Baba and he said, I had this strange vision. Then Baba said, what is so strange? Then he said, see, my door is locked, but how did you come inside? My door is locked, but you came inside and you woke me up at night and you told me all this. Then Baba said, see, I don't need to come through any doors. I'm omnipresent. I'm always present everywhere. So Baba explained to him, and so he broadened his vision of what bhakti is, what divinity is. And when Megha passed away, Baba seems to have said that he was my true devotee. He was my true devotee, and Baba accepted his offering. Like, so I think it's just a question of all of us come to the Lord with small prayers. We come with our limitations of understanding, and we have certain rituals and certain approaches which we think is right. And he respects that. He gives you that freedom. He allows you to do what you have come with. And slowly he gives you what the understanding that you should actually have.
Right. I think in Swami's Gita, Vahini, Swami says that, you know, the turning towards God for any purpose, right, even to fulfill your own worldly needs and worldly fulfillments.
Right.
Swami says that is also better than turning to everybody else in the world. He says they are as much an illusion as you are in. Why turn to them? So this buddhi of turning to God to fulfill your aspirations itself is a gift that God gives. And that will automatically take you to Artha, Arthate, Jignasu. You will come up, you know, that you're already on the path.
Right.
It, I think, you know, that's the beauty of the whole, if you look at all these old devotees who have come to Swami. Swami encouraged them, you know, to come to them for anything and everything.
Correct.
Swami not only indulged them, Swami also encouraged them. Swami said, yes, you can come to me and ask me for anything. And through that itself, Swami would teach them lessons. And, you know, I was listening to this talk of one of our senior brothers. He was narrating his family had, I think, mica mines.
Right.
At the time. You know, they were doing very well in business and all that. And something happened and the local collector came and, you know, put an order saying that the mines have to be closed. So, as always, they came running to Swami. And Swami asked them what happened. They said, Swami, this has happened. Our mines have been closed. And this person told Swami that, Swami, 2,000 people work in that mine. He said, 2,000 people are hungry. Their families are hungry because of this. Because of me, I'm feeling very, very repentant about it. I don't know what to do. And Swami said, I can imagine how much loss you must be in, how much of investment you must have put in, but you're thinking of those 2,000 people.
Right.
Swami said, for this, I will help you. And I mean, the way things pan out, Swami tells him, you go and file a petition in the court against the order. And Swami said, I will help you. So he says, okay, and he goes. And as always, there are adjournments and hearings again and again. Finally, it comes to the last hearing. The judge has said that we will finish it in the next hearing. So he comes and tells Swami, Swami, it's the last hearing. I don't know what is going to happen. I'm only, again, he said, I'm concerned about these 2,000 families that are dependent on me. So he says, okay, you go, I will take care. Then Swami tells him what will happen. Swami says, this time when you go, no, your lawyer will not come. Says, Swami, why will my lawyer not come? I am paying him and he's a good man and, you know, he will come. Swami says, no, he will not come. This time, you know, he will not be able to make it. And then he said, Swami, then what will happen? Will it get adjourned again? Swami said, no, the judge will call you and the judge will tell you only argue the case. You only present your, you know, your case in front of me. So these were initial years of this family coming to Swami, and they said, I think Swami, you don't know how this court and all work. It's impossible. The judge is never going to say that. Swami said, no, you see, no, this is what will happen. The judge will tell you, argue your case. And he said, then Swami, what will happen? Then Swami said, then the judge, no, he will bend his head down. And he will hold the, you know, in between his, you know, the portion be, above your nose, in between your two eyes. Like how Swami would, you know, hold that post sometimes during bhajans. Swami said he'll hold like that and he'll think. And Swami is giving the full description of what is going to happen. And then this devotee said, Swami, then what will happen? That you go and see tomorrow. Then he goes to this court hearing, and exactly as Swami said, the person, his lawyer doesn't turn up. He goes and tells the judge that my lawyer is not there. And the judge says, okay, then you present your case. Just as Swami said. So he presents the whole argument. And exactly like how Swami said, that judge you know, holds his potion between his eyes and starts thinking. And when the judge holds that pose, in that courtroom, he sees Swami sitting there.
Oh.
He has the vision of Swami sitting there.
Mm.
And then the judge gives the judgment saying that this is purely personal vendetta. Mm. The collector does not have jurisdiction to ban or close the mine. It should have been the mines inspector.
Mm.
And this person has a very good track record. So I, squash this order and he can continue the mine.
My God.
He comes back and again Swami tells him the same thing. Swami said, because you were concerned about those people, I have helped you. You look at it, you know, it's a crisis in a business. The person comes and for everything you come running to Swami, for this also you come running to Swami. Swami says, I will, you know, at the same time when he's solving the problem, Swami is also saying why I'm solving the problem.
Correct.
So that you know what pleases Swami, you know what is the path that will lead you closer to Swami. And at the same time, Swami is also showing his, complete control over the whole situation of how he can help.
Beautiful.
As you're saying, you know, this is one of the things which Krishna says in the Gita, right?
Mm.
Whichever path you choose, in that path I will come and redeem you.
Right.
He says, you want to come and seek, you have health problems, you come seeking me, Swami. Krishna says, in that path I will come and catch you. If you want wealth and your problem with your business, I will come in that path and catch you. You know, so many devotees, we were talking to the daughter of the owner of Java Ice Creams, right? Mr.
Yes.
Java. You know, she had some form of polio or something when she was young. And that's how the family comes to Swami.
Right.
And finally, when Mr. Java comes, he's the most hesitant to come to Swami. And finally, he comes after Swami makes her walk.
Mm-hmm.
The wife goes and tells him, at least you should come and express your gratitude.
Mm.
When he comes, Swami tells him, I gave her this ailment so that I can draw you to me.
Amazing.
So that was the other thing which he says here about Swami giving rings and japmalas to these other devotees.
Mm-hmm.
And then this question comes where Swami showed how that japmala has to be used. And then Swami looks at one Nigerian man,
right.
A person from Nigeria, and says, Swami looks at him and says, what religion? What is your religion?
Mm.
And that man says, Swami, Christian. Do you like Jesus? He says, yes. Then moving his hand, Baba created a ring, the center stone of which carries a very fine portrait of Jesus. First he shows the ring to those of us sitting near his chair, then to the Nigerian, saying, do you like Jesus? Which do you want, Jesus or Sai? The Nigerian replies, I would be pleased with either. Then Baba holds the ring between thumb and forefinger about 6 inches from his lips and blows his breath upon it. Then he shows it to those close to his chair. The portrait on the center stone has changed from that of Jesus to a portrait of Sai. To the Nigerian, Baba then says, now you have both. Come here. The man moves forward and Baba places the ring on his finger. Baba says, see, a perfect fit. Later on, it was the Nigerian's turn to go into the inner interview room for a brief private conversation. And when he came out, we could see that the ring had changed yet once again. Baba had again recreated the ring and it was now a single large diamond in an appropriate setting. As Swami followed the man into the main room, he said, he didn't like a large ring. This remark caused considerable merriment. In fact, the entire interview was joyful in the extreme and Baba was in a great quote-unquote mood. Constantly cracking jokes, hearing such happy laughter coming from the group, the people outside were wondering what on earth was happening.
That is one common experience. Right. When an interview is going on, people outside are completely lost and they suddenly hear laughter and hear so much of merriment. You wonder what's going on. Those are really beautiful days.
Right.
And the way Swami is blessing this devotee with the form of Jesus because he is a Christian.
Right.
And then he says, changes it back to Swami's face. In fact, there is another beautiful incident which I've read somewhere. I think Kasturi uncle has narrated it or written it somewhere. He says there was a man who came to Swami, and he was actually working in Bangalore, and suddenly he got transferred to Calcutta, and he was very upset that he had to go away from Swami and he had to work elsewhere. He was far away, and more important was that his wife's sister her husband, they were in Calcutta, and he was in a much better position than this person. So he had that problem of, you know, ego, and he didn't want to meet his brother-in-law and all that. So a whole complex of going away from here and all that. And finally, anyway, he had to go. And he went, the moment he went there, he fell down a flight of stairs, broke his tooth, two teeth in the front, and he was in a lot of pain, and he was cursing Swami. He said, "Swami, what have I done wrong? I've always been sincere and faithful to you, and you have sent me here, and I have to go on embarrassing, I have to meet my brother-in-law," and all that he was going through. And he had some skin problem also he was going through. And he was going through all that, and he was just wondering, what is all this happening? Then one afternoon, he was just sitting on his easy chair, and Swami appeared there. And Swami held a book in front of his face, and Swami said, "Read this." Because his man was constantly cursing Swami, Swami said, "Read this book." And he said, "Swami, I don't have my glasses." Swami said, "Go get your glasses and read this." And he got up. And Swami had vanished by that time. Swami is not there, the book is not there. So he did not know, my God, which book Swami was showing, which passage Swami was trying to show me. And he didn't understand. And he went to the library in Calcutta. He went to the library and went on searching. What he remembered was, it was a leather-bound book, and it had three columns. The print had three columns on each page. So that was kind of unique. And it was somewhere halfway through, or he had a mark where, what kind of page number. And so he was wondering, oh my God, what is this book? What is this book? He was searching frantically, and then his assistant came and told him, "Oh, I know what book it is." He said, "What? How do you know?" He said, "It is the Bible, of course." And he said, "I have a new print of the Bible, which exactly fits your description of what Baba was holding." And so he brought his Bible, in which there were these three columns, and it was a leather book, and it was bound and all that. And he approximated the page number, and he went to that page, and there it was written, the story of Job in the Bible, where he was undergoing a lot of difficulties and suffering in his life. And in spite of all the difficulties, the only thing he didn't give up was his faith on the Lord. And he says, because he held to his faith, and since he was so steadfast, all his problems went away one by one. And Swami wanted this gentleman to read that passage from the Bible. Imagine. So there is no difference between a Christian and Islam, a Muslim. And Swami brought forth the Bible to give him that kind of faith and confidence in that moment.
Beautiful. And this whole description which His love gives you, how many times we've seen this. Sometimes you look at it and, why would Swami do that?
Exactly.
You know, we've seen so many. I had a classmate. I mean, this is within a span of a hour's interview. That was over 3 days.
Right.
Every day Swami would come and ask him. Swami had given him a diamond ring. The next day Swami came and asked him, do you like this diamond or you want different color? Swami changed the color. The next day again Swami came and said, you want one stone? You want nine stones? Change it. Then again came back to the first. This one, why he does that? Probably it is, to get rid of our attachment. Because whatever comes from Swami, we get attached to. Swami had told this to one of the students. Swami said, see, whatever Swami gives, that which is in the world, that which is worldly, even if it is given by God, will change.
Right.
Will undergo change. Because it is something worldly. And that is the nature of anything that is within the world, it will undergo change. So even if it comes from God's hand, you cannot be attached to that. Maybe that is why Swami is constantly changing, or is it?
It's also the chamatkar, the, you know, the twinkle in his eyes. Sometimes when you see Swami doing these things, his face reflects so much of happiness. You know, it brings that twinkle in his eyes, and that, like he would sometimes say, tamasha. And he would be so happy. You know, I can never forget in our 10th standard when we got a class interview, and we were just 10th class students, and somebody had managed to make some get some pakoda from the hostel and offer. They were showing it to Swami in a bowl, and Swami saying, "What is this?" This is, "Swami, it is pakoda." And what is this pakoda? What is it made up of? Then it is made up of this mao. Then it is made up of salt. Then it is made up of this, that, water. You have to mix it and you have to fry it. All that Swami is saying. Onion also is there. Everything Swami is saying. Then we were wondering, what is Swami getting to? And Swami took that piece of pakoda and he was admiring it. And he was looking at it intensely and he was telling, this is what it's made up of. See, this is what pakoda is. I said, wow. This is our 10th class interview, and and we have got the most important assignment in front of us, that is the board exam. I mean, when you are in 10th standard, you think that is the end of your life, and the most difficult thing in your life is to write the board exam. So you think, what is Swami talking about pakoda and all that? And suddenly he blew on the pakoda, and he just blew 3 times and it became the Kohinoor diamond. And Swami said, see, Kohinoor, Kohinoor, worth lakhs and lakhs and lakhs and lakhs of rupees. And Swami went around showing it to everybody. And he came back to his chair, again blew on it and made it pakoda. And he broke that pakoda and gave it to the boys. And they happily had it. Now, this was the incident that happened inside the interview room. But the moment he came out from the interview room, there were some VIPs sitting there, and you should see Swami's face. The way Swami is so happy about this whole incident, and Swami is telling that VIP, you know what they saw? Pakoda! Pakoda became diamond. And diamond again became pakoda. Swami is telling with so much of, you know, happiness and so much of bliss. Like, I can never forget that image. So sometimes he just does these things so that we remember him. See, now ultimately, whether it is a pakoda or the diamond, finally that face of Swami, that bliss with which he was narrating, that is what sticks in our hearts. And I think that's the most important ultimately. Anything that draws you back to him, I think that is what is most...
Like, very interestingly, you know, Swami calls these visiting cards.
Right.
It's a very sweet incident which, again, based on these class interviews... Swami had called this group for a class interview. I think the master's program, they were graduating. Right? That's going to be the end of their student career in Swami's institutions. Swami was showering so many rings and this and that. More than the gifts, it is that proximity, right?
Right.
So at the end of it, one of the students, you know, looked at Swami and said, Swami, now when we walk out of this interview room, we will never get so close again. He said, I mean, that's it. We can never imagine another moment where we will be so close to Swami. He said, we cannot take it. How will we again come back? He says, now when we come back, we'll be old students, Swami. I mean, even you will not have time for us. Swami said, why? You can come. Anytime you want, you can come. Swami was saying. He said, no, Swami, we will not even be recognized as this one. So this is the last. After this, we can never be close. He said, no. Whenever you come, you tell. Like this, Swami is told. Then they were saying, no, Swami, how that will happen? Swami said, okay, I will give you a visiting card. You can show that and come. And for it, I think the 20, 30 of them were there, Swami materialized those visiting cards, no, which Swami used to give. Okay. Swami's photo, Swami's signature, Bhagwan Sri Sat Sai Baba. And he gave, but it was so symbolic. You know, the one of the students recollecting that. It is not that now if you go and show that in the security gate, they're not going to let you sit in front or anything like that. But so symbolic. Swami said, when you feel distant from me, see that. Right? You don't have to come here and physically be close to Swami. So all of these experiences or you know, moments, they're only to connect you again wherever you are. You know, you feel you're distant. You know, as that beautiful Kavali goes, if you feel that God is distant from you, just search a little within, you'll know that he's always
within,
next to you.
Right. That's why I think these experiences of what happens in the interview room and how individually Swami has touched each one's life and each one Swami has inspired, raising them a little bit from each one from the level that they are, gently raising them up, and then giving them glimpses of the goal and also being with them on the path. In fact, Satyasa Anandadai, they said, Swami, we want liberation, we want moksha. What is going on, Swami? Mm-hmm. What is all this? Every time we are coming, we are doing this. Swami says, but you have got duties to perform.
Mm-hmm.
See, you complete your duties in this life. Even those duties, you do it as with love, as an offering to me. Once you complete your duties, then you can completely dedicate to a spiritual life. So practical and, you know, absolutely took everybody step by step towards.
Beautiful. I think we'll have to conclude with that. We didn't go through much of the text, but of course that really doesn't matter as long as we are able to remain in Swami's thoughts. And on this very beautiful and auspicious day, Swami has allowed us to think so much of Him. And I think for every moment and every day that passes in Swami's thoughts, we can only be eternally grateful to Swami for that opportunity. The mind that Swami has given us is, as you started, it is a Bahumati, right? It is a gift from God, and it is a mind that is capable of going and running in all directions. So such a mind Swami has allowed us to, at least for whatever little time, turn towards Swami, and we can only be grateful to Swami for that. Dear listeners, we'll end with a song on the other side of this song. There will be programs following. Brother Ganesh will be here with the Veda Jignasa program. We meet you all next week for another episode of the Afternoon Satsang. Till then, take care. Jai Sai Ram.
నారాయణుడే నరుడై వెలసి నడయాడే నవ వైకుంఠ సాయియుగం ఇది స్వర్ణయుగం 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 ఇది స్వర్ణయుగం